Most people, when they first come to faith, they expect God to make a difference in their lives. You know, a lot of people come to the Lord in some sort of crisis situation, and we're pleading, we're praying, you know, Lord, please make a difference in my life. Deliver me from this problem. Heal me from this situation. You know, get me out of this mess, or give me the strength to get through it. But that, a lot of times, is what motivates us to even seek the Lord. Other people come to the Lord by way of logic and reason. Because our faith is completely logical and completely reasonable. So if anyone who claims to be a scientific thinker really puts the claims of God, the claims of Bible to the test, there's only one outcome, and that is that God's word is true, his promises are sure, we're lost in our sin, but we're saved by grace through faith in a Savior, God's only Son, who became one of us to die for our sin. And all of that stuff just unfolds in the most logical, rational sense. And so people that approach the Lord that way, then they recognize the truth, and then they fully expect God to make a difference in their lives. That's what God does. That's God's track record. That's God's promise to make a difference in your life. Now, still there are others who come to the Lord by way of some supernatural experience that they can't explain, but they also can't deny. And after they go through that experience, they know that their lives will never be the same. That is a part of my testimony. I don't think I'm any different from anybody else. As I came to faith and I exercised faith, believing what to my worldly, fleshly way of thinking and living, you know, couldn't be true or probably wasn't true, there were a couple of, you know, there were a couple of things that happened where it's like, whoa, the supernatural kind of reached down into my natural life and did something or said something or touched my life in a way where either I'm insane because I hallucinated or imagined this thing, or it really happened. And if it really happened, it's really God. And if it's really God, he's really there. And if he's really there, then his word is really true. And all the rest of the pieces fall into place. And so when you come to the Lord through that way, just like the first two, you end up expecting the Lord, sort of looking out for the Lord to make a difference in your life, to do things, to do stuff, as one writer puts it so casually. But very few people come to the Lord expecting that they could or would ever make a difference in the lives of others. It's just an observation. I can't say, thus saith the Lord, and quote you chapter and verse, but it is my observation that when people come to the Lord, whatever, you know, the path that takes them there, they're so overwhelmed by what the Lord has done and is doing in their lives and what they look forward to him doing in their lives that there's usually not enough thought or not very much thought given to what they might do, the difference that their life might make in the world or in the kingdom of God. That's just kind of the reality of it, which, by the way, is a very strange phenomenon in light of the fact that the search for significance is one of the driving forces of human nature. We are born with this desire, what is it, the Constitution talks about inalienable rights? Well, we are born with this inalienable urge, this desire to make a difference to somebody, somehow, some way, somewhere, at some time during our years on earth. You know, we want to matter. I mean, the satisfaction that we get from family and friendships, that's part of who we are, seeking that satisfaction. We like to help, and we appreciate being helped when we need help. We like to give, and we enjoy being given to. We have a need to matter, to make a difference in the lives of others. And maybe that's why it is so thrilling and so healing when we first learn that we do matter to God. We're on this quest to make a difference in life, in business, in, you know, in relationships, in whatever, a variety of ways. And then to find out that here we are just, you know, a lump on a log, just the way we are, and we make a difference. We matter to the Lord. We know that He loves and cares about each one, even though we're anything but perfect, anything but deserving. We know that He accepts us just the way we are, with our scars and our scabs and dirt under our fingernails and all the rest. We know that He treasures, and I like to quote that book, He is particularly fond of each and every one of us. But still, it often comes as a surprise that because of our relationship with God, we matter. That is, we make a difference to the world around us. Now, Jesus wants you to know that you make a difference. Now, you might think you don't, but you do. Or you might think you do, but you don't, at least not for the reason that you think you do. Did I lose you? Did that make sense? Now, before we dig into this idea, we got to put it into context because, honestly, not everyone makes the kind of difference that we're talking about here. Only those who have been through that process described in verses 3 through 12 matter the way that Jesus tells us we matter. Now remember, quick review from verse 3. When it comes to the eternal, invisible spirit world that transcends and dwarfs this little drama that we're wrapped up in here and now, you don't have a leg to stand on. That's what verse 3 told us. Blessed are the poor in spirit. See, that means that you're convinced of and have given up arguing about or against the fact that you have fallen and you can't get up when it comes to things of the Spirit, to the Spirit in the spirit world, not in your own power anyway. Verse 4, we learned that poverty of spirit leads to a confrontation in your own heart with the reality of sin. And when the full impact and consequences of sin kind of slaps you in the face, you know, hits you up alongside the head, the only right reaction, the only true reaction is a sense of loss that is overwhelming. It's a grief that only the Lord can comfort. Now, in verse 5, we learned that experience leads to an understanding and acceptance of how you fit into the grand scheme of God's creation and God's kingdom. Meekness or humility being an accurate assessment of who you are in light of an accurate assessment of who God is. And when that all comes together, you know who you are, you know where you fit, how you fit, you know where you belong, and you're comfortable in your own skin. Now, verse 6 tells us that with that new perspective comes a desperate, a burning desire to think, talk, act, and live according to God's definition of what's right. Half right doesn't cut it for you anymore. And wrong isn't an option for you anymore. And it's not because you've had or because you need to have some religious trip laid on you. It's God's trip that you're interested in, and you just can't stand to settle for anything less than His best. Now, verse 7 explained how the natural expression of this transformation so far is a tendency towards mercy. See, as you receive mercy, and as you come to understand the cost of the mercy you've received, as well as the love behind that mercy, you find yourself being uncharacteristically, that is from a human standpoint, characteristically merciful. And, you know, Lord, get those dirty rats, turns into, Father, forgive them. They don't realize what they're doing. And in verses 8 through 12, as we looked at last week, after all of that, the effects of a cleansed heart become evidence. Blessed are the pure in heart. You find yourself moved and motivated to bring God's peace to the turmoil around you. Blessed are the peacemakers. And you find yourself paying the price for not going with the flow of the world. Blessed are you when they persecute you because of me. Now, after all this has taken place, and only then do verses 13 and 16 apply. So let's begin reading in verse 13, Matthew 5, 13. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It's then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. So after all this process, in verses 3 through 12, which you can just, if you want to label it, call it becoming a Christian. And really, if you look through this and you kind of see a missing link in your own story, a missing chapter in your own story, you know, I can only encourage you to go back up and go through it again. Because without this process, without every part of this process, then we don't reach the point where Jesus starts telling us in verse 13 and in verse 14, you are. Not you could be, you might be, not you should be, you ought to be, not you better work real hard to be, but he says after reaching this, you know, this point of the first 12 verses, you are. This is what you are. And he's going to talk about salt and light. Now, Jesus says in the first 13, you are the salt of the earth. Well, salt, as we all know, serves several purposes. Several purposes, not only then, but now in our culture. We usually first think of salt as a flavoring, right? I like salt on stuff. It just makes stuff taste better, doesn't it? I was watching one of those cooking shows the other day on the satellite. And this individual, you know, there's this, the master chef, and then there's the the pedestrian. And the guy or gal, I can't remember, they prepared this dish, and it was something that you would never eat. You would never see, you would never cook. It had a name you couldn't pronounce. Basically, it was spruced up piece of fish. But it had stuff on it I'd never heard of, and it looked like a work of art. I mean, and the way the stuff was sprinkled around, and there was powder, some kind of powdered stuff, and sauces, and a little thing, and a green thing on top sticking up. And it just looked like, you know, you don't eat it, you'll mess it up. It was beautiful. It really was beautiful. And, you know, the guy's looking at the chef, the master chef. He goes, oh, this looks great. It looks like the fish is cooked just right, and I can see that you've got a little of this and a little of that. Great combination. And he takes his fork, and he takes a little bite and kind of does this weird thing where he eats it. And then he says, you know what? This dish would have been perfect if you hadn't forgotten the salt. Sorry. You lose. And he pushes the guy of the dish out of, and you go, wow. I mean, after all that trouble, this thing was a work of art. It's so beautiful. All the ingredients were there. It was cooked perfect, but according to this master chef, you know, didn't he, the guy just forgot. in the course of the pressure of cooking this thing, he forgot to put a little salt on it, and that disqualified him from the whole thing, you know. Salt not only affects the flavor of things, but salt also creates thirst. Isn't that right? You just try to eat a bag of peanuts, salted peanuts, and not come away going, I've got to have something to drink, you know, because you use water, pop, juice, anything, something wet. I've got to, you know, the salt just does it. It dries out your mouth and it dries out your throat and it dries out your insides. You can actually, you know, eat too much salt and you get dehydrated because the salt sucks up all the fluids, all the water. So salt creates thirst. Salt also, and we probably don't use it this way much, if at all, these days, but in the first century, salt was known as a healing agent. Salt promotes healing. Did you know that? Maybe you did. I mean, you put salt on a wound. Now, one thing I do know is that it hurts. Salt burns. When you get a cut or something and you put salt on it or just accidentally spill some salt while you're salting your peanuts, whatever, it hurts. But even though it hurts, it's promoting healing. It's a good thing. It's a helpful thing. And then in this day, in the first century, and in this country 100 or so years ago, salt, you know, before the advent of electricity and refrigeration, salt was primarily thought of as a preservative. When you go out and kill some game and you gut it and you bring it back and you put it out in the meat locker, but there's no refrigerator, so what do? You salt that stuff down because the salt kills the bacteria and prevents the decay. Now, salt was really important in Jesus' day, you know, primarily because you couldn't go down to Drew's and get a bag of ice. In fact, the only way you got ice was to climb up to the top of the mountain where the snow was, and by the time you got back down home, it all melted. You know, ice wasn't part of life, everyday life back then. So that idea of salt, it was really important to keep stuff from going bad. Another thing about salt in Jesus' day, it was used for payment. Really? Yeah. You ever heard that old saying, he's not worth his salt? That's where that comes from. He didn't do a good day's work. He's not worth the salt that we're going to pay him with. Now, simple question. Does salt make a difference? Yeah, salt makes a big difference. Secondary question. What does salt have to do to make a difference? Nothing. It just has to be salt. It doesn't have to try to do anything. It doesn't have to work to do anything. It's just, it is salt, and because it is salt, it does make a difference wherever it's used. And so when Jesus says, you are the salt of the earth, you that have been through this process of poverty of spirit and mourning for sin and meekness and humility and hunger and thirst for righteousness and pure of heart and merciful and on down the list, the whole thing. You folks are the salt of the earth. You make a difference. Now let that sink in for a minute. Now some of you know you make a difference. But I'm going to venture to guess that there are some and maybe even most who don't realize the difference you make just being you. See, salt makes a difference by being salt. You don't have to come up with a great ministry idea. I know what I'll do. Now, if you get an idea, run with it. You know, go for it. But don't think that that's what the Lord requires of you. You already are salt. You're salt to your family. You're salt to the people you work with. You're salt to the people you drive on the freeway with. Oh, that's kind of scary. You make a difference. You know, I've gone by, I don't know what the deal is out here on the highway. I guess I'm a city boy. And people don't go, when they go slower than the speed limit, there's just part of me wants to climb out of the back of my head and stand up on the hood of the car and say, what's wrong with you? The speed limit's 55. I got places to go. I don't want to die between here and Sequest Park. And where's that you better get over in the passing lane or I'm going to drive right up your tailpipe because, you know, I can't drive 55. Well, I can drive 55. I can't drive 54. I just can't stand it. And then, you know, so I'll get behind and maybe it's a tourist and, you know, you try to, they're enjoying the beauty that we experience every day and, you know, the lake and the mountain and the trees and it's just a wonderful thing. And so you try to give them some slack. You see that Wisconsin license plate and you kind of slow down a little bit and wait for the passing lane, you know. And then maybe it's somebody, I don't know, whatever reason, but, you know, 40 is just not a good speed out there. It's just not. And, I get behind somebody going 40, and especially, maybe it's just me. I didn't plan to go into all this, but I'm on a rant here. I time my trip. I know how long it takes to drive down to the freeway and down the freeway to Longview or Vancouver or wherever, and I time my trip, and I don't give myself extra time to go 40 down the highway. It turns a 10-minute drive into a 20-minute drive. I guess that means I'm going 80. Okay, it turns a 10-minute drive into a 15-minute drive. It's only 5 minutes, but I can't stand it. And so you get to the passing lane, and you shift down, and you step on it, and you kind of hope you hear that, buddy. You know? And it's all I can do to keep my hands from, you know, waving that special wave that you wave or giving them a glare, you know, or something, because I realize is when I go around and they're going to see that bumper sticker that says, Grace Happens, Tootle Christian Fellowship. You know, it's my worst nightmare is to pull around somebody and have them go, hey, pastor, as I'm, you know, eating them alive in my thoughts. Why did that come up? Because you make a difference. You make a difference at home. You make a difference at work. You make a difference on the highway. You make a difference in your neighborhood. You make a difference everywhere you go, everything you do. If you are a true believer, a born-again believer, a fully devoted follower, or whatever you want to call it, a disciple of Jesus Christ, you make a difference wherever you go, whatever you do. It's a statement of fact. You know, more so even than a promise. You are the salt of the earth. Now, when you're the salt of the earth, that means that you're going to bring out the best in people, the way that salt brings out the best in food. It means that you're going to make people thirsty for what you have in the Lord. It means that you're going to bring healing to some people, even if it hurts at first. And it means that you are going to be a preventative for decay and rot, the rot and decay of sin. Now he says, if you're not doing these things, if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? You know, you can't re-salt salt. It's then good for nothing but to be thrown down and trampled underfoot by men. If you're not being the salt, that means that you're going to get trampled on. Your faith is going to get trampled on. Your efforts to serve the Lord or please the Lord that are done in the flesh, not in the spirit, are going to get trampled on. So we need to ask ourselves a couple of questions, you know, look in the mirror and kind of have a reality check. Is my faith making a difference or am I getting trampled on? And if it's getting trampled on, then maybe it's time to go back and review verses 3 through 12. Because when Jesus says you are the salt of the earth, he's not talking to anybody, everybody. He said this to that small group of disciples that he had chosen to become his apostles, those who had shown a commitment and proven that they believed in him, that their faith was genuine. You are the salt of the earth. Now, in the next verse, Jesus says, you are the light of the world. First, you're the salt of the earth, and now it's you are the light of the world. Again, it's not some of you are or you might be, or you could be if you worked at it really hard. You're either light or you're not. You're either salt or you're not. To these people who had gone through this process and whose hearts he knew, and they'd been cleansed by faith, even though we, you know, theologically we have yet to go to the cross and all that. You are, he says, the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Tradition says that the location of the Sermon on the Mount is on the hillside near the Sea of Galilee, just, what would that be, west, kind of around the corner from the north end, or from your perspective, this way, around the corner from the north end, that's east. It's either east or west. Anyway, whichever way it is, past Capernaum, and then there's a pretty much, you know, it kind of looks like the Columbia Gorge on the south side, where it's nothing but dead brown grass. And the tradition is, in fact, somebody built, I think, some queen somewhere decided, oh, here, this is where it was, and they built a tourist trap. So you can get your t-shirt, I've been to the Sermon on the Mount. And maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but it was there somewhere. And from that location, or from that whole general area, really, then as now, when it begins to get dark out, and it's time for the street lights to come on, or in Jesus' time for the candles and lamps to be lit, there's a hill up on the north end of the Sea of Galilee, a little village up there called Chorazin. And because of the way it sits on the hillside, almost from anywhere you are, you can see the lights from Chorazin. It's possible. It would just be really cool, but I have no way of knowing if it really is the case. But it's possible that when Jesus spoke these words, it was about dusk. And he said, look, you know, the lights of Chorazin, the city on a hill, you can't hide that. You're the light of the world, and your light won't be, can't be hidden any more than the light of that city up on the hill there. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, you know, or a bucket. But they put it on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Now, the salt was a situation where you just are the salt. You're either salty or you're not, right? But with the light, he says, you know, there's a warning here. Apparently, it would be possible to put a basket on the lamp if you wanted to. The way he says this, it's kind of an absurd thing. Nobody lights a lamp, you know, and nobody turns on the flashlight and then stuffs it in their coat. All you're doing is burning the battery down. You turn the thing on because you want to see where you're going. So nobody does that. But apparently we have that option, and too many of us exercise it. And it kind of ties in with that verses 11 and 12, there's that, or 10, 11, and 12, we're so afraid of rejection that we are pretty timid about letting the light shine. Now, there's always the other extreme. There's the obnoxious, you know, self-anointed evangelist who's going to pester you into the kingdom of heaven, or so he thinks. That's another extreme. Well-intentioned, as hopefully some of them are. But when you've been down this road, when you've been through this process, starting with that realization, that epiphany of, man, I don't have anything of value to offer the Lord at all, and then sin has taken everything from me, from this world, and sin has put Jesus on that cross, not just for me, but also because of me. And then just on down the list, and you kind of go through this thing, you're mourned, but you're comforted because you're forgiven. You're, you know, you're meek, you're humble, you know who you are, you know how you fit. That means you're not uptight and insignificant or insecure anymore. You know, you're kind of comfortable in your own skin, and you just know who you are, and you're fine with that. And, you know, you get to that point where now he says, you are the light of the world. How is it possible to be a light yet not be seen, or to be hidden, How can that happen is kind of the thrust here. And just how is that possible? I think it's significant that the Lord doesn't make this a command, thou shalt not hide thy light, and make it another work for us to worry about whether we've done or not, but just to be light the same way you be salt. You know, a couple of weeks ago, had a 30-some year reunion of some guys I used to make music with, and you know, it was kind of weird. It was kind of fun, you know, class reunion kind of a thing. Haven't seen them for 30 years, haven't seen other people for a long time. And there we are, you know, I'm standing at my end of the stage looking down at that guy and that guy and that guy, just like I looked at them every single night for year after year. And everybody's in their spot and they're playing, and, you know, one guy's still making the same mistakes, and the other guy's still playing the one thing so perfect it just makes you forget to swallow when you catch yourself drooling. And it's just there, here we are, right back where we started. And there's always, you know, some individual who thinks it's time, now's the time, and this is the place to make some kind of smart alecky crack about Pastor Ron. How can Pastor Ron be a wasted ranger? Well, Pastor Ron was a wasted ranger, and I'm not going to lie about it or hide it or anything. And you know, I was who I was, and I am who I am. But there's always somebody, you know, and they put you on the spot with just some little comment. Maybe they're trying to get under your skin, or maybe they're really, you know, they think they're being funny. But you know me, I never get irritated at anything. But there's, you know, there's always somebody, and of course, there's a few somebodies. And they just have to get their little shot and their little digging. And you have, in those moments, you have an option to put a bucket over the lamp or to just kind of stand up a little taller and let the light shine. Now, I don't know, I don't consider myself special in any way, at least of all this way, but there are some people who just, I don't know how you can do that. Do what? How can you stand up and sing, you know, doing the truck stop rock, boom, boom, doing the truck stop rock, and then go the next morning, get up and go to church and be the pastor of the church? And I'm thinking, well, I don't really see the problem, because when I'm playing past truck stop rock, I'm Pastor Ron. And when I'm up in the pulpit, I'm still a little bit wasted ranger. You know, and I'm not trying to fool anybody either way. And I've figured it out, or sorted it out, and rationed it out in prayer with the Lord, and I'm okay. And you know, but you'll have these opportunities where you can back down from your faith, or you can not push back, but just stand up and say, yeah, I'm saved by grace through faith. And if you're really interested, I'd love to tell you about it. Oh, don't hand me that baloney about Jesus and all that Bible stuff. Okay, I'm not trying to cram it down your throat, you know, but you go ahead and go to hell. And me, not so much. You know, if that's the way you want it, I guess that's, you know, I'm cool with you being who you are, and I'd love to explain things to you. But anyway, there's that, you know, it's the nature of light to dispel darkness. That's what light does. I came in here this morning, it was pretty dark. I flipped on the light, guess what? The darkness went away. And the darkness didn't put up much of a fight. I didn't hear a hassle going on between the light. You get out of here. No, you get out of here. It's just when the light comes on, the darkness goes away. That's the way it is. Go home and try it. Go in your closet or your basement or someplace where it's really dark. I promise you, when the light comes on, the dark, it works every time. It's a fundamental principle of this physical existence. Where there is light, there is no darkness. That's why the cockroaches and the rats all run for the corners when the light comes on, you know? But it's the nature of light to dispel darkness. Now, you are the light, not the light of the world. Jesus is the light of the world. But you are the light of the world in this lesser light, lesser sense, in that it's his light that shines through you. It's the nature of light to dispel darkness. And look again at verse 16. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. Don't put your light under a basket, but let it shine before men, that's before people, so that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. Now, some people let their light shine because they want to be glorified. Big mistake. Because God will sort you out in short time, if that's your approach. But that God would be glorified. See, again, everything we do reflects on God. The way you parent your kids, the way you teach them, the way you raise them, that reflects on God. Integrity in your business dealings, when you pay your debts or not, or pay your bills on time or not, or if you can't pay them on time, you deal with the situation instead of just trying to, you know, you get four checking accounts and float a check, you know, write a check to that one, I write a check to that one, and by the time that comes around, maybe I'll have the money in the bank. You know, that's not letting your light shine. An honest day's work for an honest day's pay. You know, that one, maybe I shouldn't say anything, but it's too late now. Because that one, that bothers me. There are some weeks, honestly, folks, when there aren't enough hours in the day or I don't have enough strength to do all that needs to be done to take care of business here at Tootle Christian Fellowship. But there are other times when, you know, Tuesday and half of Wednesday, and I'm sitting there going, now what am I going to do? I don't have anything to do. The music's ready. The sermon's ready. I made all the phone calls. I visited whoever needed it. I went to the hospital. I went here and I did that. And it's like, now it's Wednesday afternoon. What am I going to do? And I kind of feel like a rat. I guess I'll just read a book. You know, I don't punch a time clock here. And I don't have anybody holding me accountable except me and the Lord. But it's just weird sometimes. You know, am I putting in an honest day's work for an honest day's pay? And then a couple of words come to mind where my friend Kelly Taylor told me, gosh, 20 years ago, he said, you will never feel like you deserve your salary. So just accept that. Okay, I accept that. And then my pastor, you know, tells me, he said, look, during those slow times, cherish that, because the day's coming when you're going to get a phone call at midnight, and then you're going to, you know, and then you're going to run into somebody at the hospital, and then you're going to be 3 or 4 days running. You're going to be doing weddings and funerals and counseling marriages that are exploding, plus getting everything ready for the Sunday service and organizing the home groups and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, that idea of to bring God glory with all that you do. And, you know, you can even do that when you're resting, by the way. You know, Jesus, what did he do? He climbed in the back of the boat and fell asleep. They said, you're going to sleep now? There's a storm. This boat's going to be swamped. We're all going to die. You know, and Jesus is just, well, probably not. You know, I'm not planning on drowning, and you're with me. So take it easy, you know? The idea that there's a time to rest and all that. Just like the salt, Jesus said, you are the light. And no one has to try or work at being what they are. We have in our fellowship plumbers and, you know, tradesmen, plumbers and electricians and, you know, builders and diggers and teachers and, you know, administrators and retired builders and diggers and teachers and administrators and all that. We've got, you know, a variety of things, and stay-at-home moms, the hardest job of all. And once you, you know, let's just take plumbers, for example. You want to be a plumber, it's a good job. I don't know how much money they make, but they sure get paid a lot. I know that. I don't know how much of that they take home. But, you know, so you go to some kind of trade school and you learn how to fix pipes and work a roto-rooter and solder and, you know, what up is and down is and which way water runs and how to make all that work. And, you know, you start working. Well, see, when you go to work every morning, you don't have to try. Oh, I hope I can be a plumber today. And you are a plumber. You just are a plumber. You know, the same way I'm a guitar player. I just can't help it. And so I can go out. Somebody calls me up, and if I'm available and interested, I'll go. And I don't have to go, boy, I sure hope I can play the guitar today. It's like, nah, I'm pretty comfortable. I'm pretty sure I can, you know. And they might not like it. But I know I can hold up my end. You know, no one has to try to be what they are. And Jesus says, you are salt. You are light. You, right where you are, doing what you're doing. You are salt. You are light. You make a difference. The question is, what kind of difference are you making? Are you bringing glory to God, like he talks about in verse 16? Or are you getting walked on, like he talked about in verse 13. You don't have to try to make a difference. You don't have to think up ways to make a difference. As you rest in Jesus Christ, you will be changed and you will make a difference. That's what Jesus wants you to know today.